Welcome to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. Thank you so much for being with us. Our show is brought to you by Flesch Law. Their number, 303-806-8886. Always a free initial consult. And hey, if you have a question, we have our Flesch Law text line, 720-201-8585, 720-201-8585. And we're coming to you live today from the world headquarters of Flesch Law over here in Inglewood. Kevin Flesch, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man.
I just think about, we've been really busy with all kinds of things, and then it's all good. And clients are happy with the results that we're getting for them. And I had a case that was supposed to go to trial very soon, and we got that case resolved on the eve of trial, and that's frustrating, but it's also good for the client.
Oh, because you put in all that work to be ready for trial.
And you're kind of like a bridesmaid, you know, you're ready to move forward, and then you don't. End up resolving it. So it opens up some time, but then you start working on other stuff.
Right.
So it's been an interesting time, and things are good. You know, the insurance companies eventually realize what we tell them is true, and that they got to pay fair value, or we're going to go to trial. And if they don't, then we end up in trial. But most of the time lately, they finally cave at the last minute.
So that's insurance companies fighting harder than ever? Are they? Pretty consistent.
It's pretty consistent. What happens is insurance companies, individual insurance companies, change their strategy almost on an annual basis. They'll try one thing one year, where maybe they're really hard at the beginning on the demand stage, where their initial claims reps don't have a whole lot of authority to resolve things, and so then you have to file suit against that company quite often that particular year. And then they realize their claims experience doesn't really work that way, and doesn't work well because they have a bunch of judgments against them. And so then they rethink how they're going to do it and retool it maybe the next year or 2 years later. So it really depends upon the insurance company and how their management has decided to handle these claims. But for the most part, they're all sort of in the end. When you get into litigation in particular, you get the more sophisticated claims representatives and also the lawyers representing them. And then we can have a real discussion about, especially the larger claims that we handle. Those are normally dealt with folks that have a lot of experience. And when you have folks with more experience, they recognize the risk that they may run.
Right.
And that's where you can have a real discussion with them about value. So
right.
That's good.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been seeing on the news some. It seems like every county is having a big problem with these e-bikes, and not e-bikes, but these e-motorcycles almost.
Yeah.
I mean, and we both have e-bikes. E-Bike of Colorado,
right.
544 Front Street, downtown Louisville. All right. And we know what those bikes will do. Son, some of these kids are riding these bikes. I mean, they're hauling with these kind of e-motor scooters, I think,
They're straight-up electric motorcycles.
Right.
We were on Cherry Creek Reservoir, the trail around there, a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I. Yeah, we've got the pedal assist and the e-bikes that you're able to go in those sort of situations.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still get going pretty good.
Yeah.
And we rolled up on a couple of teenage boys. They were probably 14 or 15. And, you know, I said to them, because you could tell, these weren't pedal assists. They had a trigger. They were going. I'm like, so how fast can you go on that? He's like, well, it had a limiter on it when we first got it, so you could only go so fast. But we figured how to get that limiter off. So they can scream.
Yeah.
And they're over 50, 60, 70 miles an hour.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we've had a couple of cases where kids have gotten into accidents where they're crossing intersections or things like that and not paying attention.
Right.
And hit cars.
Really?
Yeah, I've got one now where the 16-year-old kid was driving along and a car came out of an intersection. He didn't see it and he ran right into it. The kid did. He was just not paying attention.
Sure.
And it wasn't the driver of the car's fault, and he caused damage to this to this vehicle. Luckily, he's okay.
Right.
But he got cited from the city of Lakewood for what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation, and I'm having conversations with parents that their kids have these. I think we're going to see, I would guess, based upon sort of what's going on with not only the citations but also the injuries, that there's going to have to be some limitations. That's mm-hmm. some of these super, you know, over 1,000-watt bikes that are going to need to be somehow controlled, especially, you know, you have to have a driver's license or something, because mm-hmm. I see them, all the time.
Yeah, and I bring it up because we're going to talk about some things that fall under person, but I bring it up today because some people ask me, well, man, is that the same as car insurance? And is an, would an e-bike or that be treated as a motor vehicle?
No, they're not. So they're going to be more similar to they're probably going to be under your homeowner's coverage, and you've got to find out whether or not something like that is covered. Many times, like your ATVs and your other things, if they're on premises, are covered. If they're off premises, they may not be. What you're really worried about is the negligence, right?
Right, right.
If somebody gets hurt and it was the fault of the e-bike rider, what do you have for coverage? Because it is not covered under your auto policy. You would have a general liability policy portion of your homeowner's or renter's insurance that you could fall underneath that. And then it may be, if it's finally, if they're determined to be scooters or motorcycles, you'll be able to most likely get coverage for those as well, a separate coverage mm-hmm. if you wanted it. So
now, if an e-bike or whatever caused a crash where, you know, two cars and they get the ticket for causing mm-hmm. that crash, I mean, that'd be going after
the person that's riding the e-bike.
Yes. And
most likely nobody has coverage for it.
Yeah.
I just finished a case that I was telling you about in Lakewood, where the parents, there was about $6,000 or $8,000 worth of damage to the vehicle that their son had caused. And they had to, their auto, because they tried to run a claim through their auto, because they thought, well, maybe because it's involving a car that we could have it covered. And the auto policy specifically excluded it because it had two wheels. And so they then had to find out if their homeowner's coverage would cover it. And they found out, no, it wouldn't cover. So they had to go out of pocket for the restitution.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that people need to think about when their kids are out on these. Sort of, a bicycle is one thing, but when you have the power and speed of these other things, you got to be really concerned. And certainly just for the child in regards to them being hurt. I think a lot of people think of it as, well, it's just a bicycle. But most of these that are that wattage and that there's really no pedal assist and they have a trigger, they have it's like a regular motorcycle sort of setup, you've created a danger, I think.
Yeah. And as parents, maybe you went and bought it for them and it's supposed to go 30.
Make sure.
Go take it for a test ride and see if it only goes 30.
Exactly. You want to make sure.
Because they might have rigged it up, like you said.
Yep.
And these
kids are figuring it out.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, once again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh. He is our exclusive attorney here on KLZ 560. And Kevin handles a lot of things with criminal law, personal injury. And one thing we're going to talk about, because, you know, most of the time, and we're even guilty of this, we talk about personal injury and we talk about, you know, motor vehicle accidents and things like that. But this falls under what we're talking about today, but motorcycles. And Kevin, there are quite a few things that fall under this umbrella of personal injury that you take care of.
There really is. I mean, you know, all of the advertising and what people see out there a lot of times in the billboards and other things is related to motor vehicles or truck accidents or those sorts of things. But we handle a lot of other areas. Whenever you have injuries and those injuries are caused by someone else's negligence, you normally can bring a claim. And so, you know, it could be, we've had it, there's just so many different categories of things. We've had your premises liability, people slip and fall. So you have everything from, you know, being out at DIA and walking through the terminal and there's water in there and there was notice that there was water and you slip and fall and hurt yourself. You know, dog bites, you're walking through a neighborhood and somebody's dog runs out and bites you on their premises.
Right.
You know, falling in a pothole in a parking lot. There are so many different ways that people can get hurt, unfortunately, and people create dangerous conditions on premises. So that's sort of the premise liability portion that many times there aren't people that are specifically advertising for that sort of stuff, but there are lots of people that get hurt in those environments, and we help a tremendous amount of people on a regular basis. I mean, we have a number of cases annually related to, you know, your normal shoveling, not putting ice melt down, or not, you know, falling, and those sorts of things. So claims against homeowners associations, against property management companies, against regular commercial vendors, you know, gas stations, convenience stores, all kinds of different places that hold themselves out to the public for services, and they're not taking care of their sidewalks or their entrances of where they're at. And then we have, you know, basic maintenance. I've got a case right now where somebody got hurt in a swimming pool because it was a new pool and they didn't put it together right, and the stairs on the side of the pool fell off of the side of the pool and caused injury. So all kinds of odd things that happen, you know, over time.
In time, you're going to have to write a book.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm just, you know, fun stories.
How people get hurt, the unfortunate sort of the macabre things that happen to people. Right. Yeah, and there, I mean, I had a case last year where a fellow was at a coffee shop, and he was just about to sit in the chair, or he did sit in the chair with his, he had his one finger on the chair in sort of a pinch point, and the chair broke and caused him to lose part of his finger. Mm-hmm. It cut his finger completely off, and we had to decide what his finger was worth. You know, we've had just the strangest cases relating to people doing strange things in strange places.
Right. Now, premise liability, would that mostly be where you ends up going against a business? Is that the large portion of
it? Yeah, generally it's a business claim, but the businesses have their own insurance
policy. What would be something around a house? Do it, a neighbor or something might... Is there anything?
Yeah, so in some instances where individuals or cities have ordinances relating to shoveling snow, where you have to make sure that you do that within 24 hours after a snowstorm or things like that, and you cause problems there. Or if you have something inside of your house that's dangerous, and you have a guest over for some reason.
Yeah. And certainly the dog would fall into this. Yep,
yeah, exactly. And you know, there's... talking about dogs and dog bites, there's a specific statute in Colorado relating to the dog bites. So you have two different sort of categories of damages. You have the dog that has never bitten anyone before and you have no notice, and then that particular sort of claim is most likely just related to your medical expenses and any other economic damages, but you probably don't get much in the way of non-economic damages, so pain and suffering. But if the dog has a history, or the person knows that the dog is dangerous, then sort of the second portion of the statute allows you to sue for all kinds of things. Hmm. And we've had, with the merging of that statute, you know, there are a number of commercial entities out there, you know, your PetSmarts and your Home Depots and your Bass Pro Shops, all those different places that allow you to bring your dogs in. They sometimes will create a dangerous condition by allowing these dogs to be on premises. So someone that has a dangerous dog comes on the premises, that dog bites someone, and then you've got several defendants that you've got to think about: the owner of the dog, the people that allow that dog on the premise, what they knew about.
I mean, I tell people all the time, just because through the years we've done the show and we've talked about this before, I said, man, anytime you take your dog to a public place, you realize you're rolling the dice. And you may know your dog and your dog's never shown, but, you know, especially in these stores, I think where a kid, maybe a small kid, comes around now. So he's eye to eye with the dog. Right. The dog's not used to that. That scares the dog, or, you know, pulls the dog's tail, whatever, and bites the kid.
Correct.
Man.
Yeah.
And you're in a mess.
Right. And we've had a number of those sorts of cases over the years. And what ends up happening mostly is exactly that, that there's a chance meeting of a child and a dog. It's normally on the corners of these aisles, or it's normally where the child has startled the dog, or the dog is just really tense because of the situation they're in, and they react, by biting somebody. And you just don't want
And it
that.
May even start with a dog fight, like two dogs getting Then the people reach in to stop, and man.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've had
that's never going to turn out good most of the time.
No, it does not. I mean, there's always a human that ends up with some sort of bite. And unfortunately, you know, there's also situations where animal control gets involved. People maybe get cited. We've dealt with those. I've got a case right now that's coming in this week where the person was was bitten, and the owner was cited, and they're trying to figure out if there's any rabies issues, and the dog's quarantined. I mean, it's just, they're more complicated than people realize.
So yeah.
That's certainly sort of the aspect of the premises liability, you know, and relating to all of these claims, especially both the motor vehicle and the premises claims. If the government entity is involved, you have to make sure that you understand the Governmental Immunity Act and whether or not that applies to your mm-hmm. particular claim. Because let's say a police officer is driving down the road or going over the speed limit and they're chasing someone and they don't have their lights and sirens on, they hit somebody, they still have an obligation to pay that person. But if they have the lights and sirens on, then they probably don't. So it's really pretty complicated relating to how the governmental entities work. And then you have, you know, you have to make sure that you put them on notice within 182 days of the event. Otherwise, you lose jurisdiction. So there's lots of things that people need to think about. Even if you're not sure who's caused your injury, mm-hmm. that you talk with us so that we can talk through the issues and figure that out.
Right. Yeah. Again, Kevin Flesh is with us. It is Flesh Law, 303-806-8886. Always a free initial consult, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Product liability, what does that look like? Is that just... how's it from a legal term? What does that mean for people? Product liability.
Yeah. So what? In general, if somebody gets hurt, they believe they were hurt because of a manufactured item. You know, and it can run the gamut. You hear about pharmaceuticals a lot. We see all the advertisements relating to those sorts of things because they become a class, and those classes then go through the system as an entire group. But you can also have devices, medical devices, and we've seen those. Mm-hmm. And again, something, you know, we had a bunch of cases relating to vaginal mesh cases and some of the other gastric
stuff. Oh, yeah, I remember
stuff.
That a few years back.
Yeah, exactly. So all of those sorts of cases kind of went through the system. You've got the talcum powder cases. You've got the Roundup cases. All of those sorts of cases that are bundled together in specific districts of the federal system because mm-hmm. they become federal cases. But smaller cases, we've had strange cases. Like we had a case with a Toyota truck a few years ago that it had an accelerator problem, and it caused injury to my client. He had an accident and blew out an eardrum, and so it was a weird mechanism of injury as to what took place, but it was clear that the vehicle didn't work properly, and that caused problems. And then you just have all sorts of other... sort of product, and that kind of falls into the food allergy stuff too, where you go to a restaurant and you have a peanut allergy, for example, and they don't tell you correctly relating to what's in the menu and what's in the ingredients. I just finished a case up with that, which is also a very interesting dynamic because Colorado has specific statutes relating to what needs to be in menus and what needs to be told to you, and whether you are completely put on notice. So those sorts of things, it's sort of an intersection between premises liability and also mm-hmm. product liability because they're creating a meal. So it's a product. So, and then, you know, if you think that you've got a problem with something in the way of a product that has caused you injury, you want to make sure that you get together with the lawyer right away. So you'd want to call us right away so that we can do some investigation. Because sometimes it may be two different ways that these cases go. They could be there isn't a big enough class so that mm-hmm. they combine them, and then you're pretty good. Or there could be a class that's already been established, and then you'll want to get in contact with the lawyers handling that class. So you could come to me. For example, we've had cases where, especially the pharmaceutical stuff, where people come in and they'll be like, oh, I want you to handle this case. And I look at it and I determine that there's liability, but it isn't something that we really will handle very well because there's already a class that's been established.
Gotcha.
Then we'll refer them to those lawyers that are dealing with that class.
But get back to free consult. That's what it's there for.
Exactly. And we have a conversation.
It's worth a call.
That's exactly right. I've also handled cases where the claims are in the class, but there's still value in us being involved in it. And so we'll bring those. I had a couple of cases a few years ago of the same sort of injury relating to the same product. We brought those cases to a larger class, and then we moved that through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're very, there was something that you want to talk with us about. You don't really want to do it on your own because it is complicated relating to not only the statute of limitations, but also just the manner in which you have to prove those things.
Right.
The most recent case I had was a lithium battery that blew up. Somebody was using it. It was a battery charger. Again, he got to us really quickly. He had some really significant injuries. We did some research relating to the product. It didn't seem that there was a class of individuals, so we ended up just suing on his behalf, but we ended up resolving that case after we got through about half of the litigation. Had to get experts relating to lithium batteries, learned a lot about lithium batteries, which is interesting. They're, you know, obviously they're really stable, but when they become unstable, they become quite dangerous.
Right.
I can understand why airlines don't want them in their holds, because they can cause some significant damage in the way that they don't blow up, but they certainly melt and cause significant heat and discharge of energy.
Right. Yeah. Is workers' comp type stuff sort of under this and sort of not?
Yeah. So workers' comp generally by itself, so the concern for workers' comp is how did you get injured? The most important thing relating to the workers' comp is, first of all, you were injured on the job. So that becomes a workers' compensation claim. Then the issue is, how were you injured? Was it a fellow employee? Was it something that was managed by the employer? Most likely, if those two things have happened, if your injury was related to something that another employee did, or it was something that was managed by your employer, you know, let's say you work in an office building like you're in today,
right?
And the office building is managed by your employer. They take care of everything within the building relating to any sort of dangerous condition or maintenance of the building.
Mm-hmm.
If you get hurt in the building, then most likely it's a workers' comp claim only. Where workers' comp sort of intersects with other types of law that you may be able to bring a claim against is in the event that a third party is injected into the fact pattern relating to how your injury occurred. I'll give you some examples. You're on a job. This is a real case that I had. My client had his son with him on the job site. They were working on remodeling a restaurant up in Summit County. It was a two-story restaurant, and they had ladders from a third party. They had another subcontractor in there that they were using their ladders.
Okay.
Their ladders weren't maintained, and the ladder broke when his son was on the ladder almost to the second floor, and he dropped about 12 feet and had some significant injuries. Now, if my client had been taking care of the ladder and it was their own ladder, he wouldn't have had a claim against anyone because that was his own fault and it was his son. But because a third party, another subcontractor, allowed them to use that ladder and they assumed that the ladder was in good condition before it broke, we had a claim against that third party. We also had a claim against the restaurant owner for not making sure who exactly was on the premises and whether or not there was a dangerous condition with a child on the premises. And so there were a couple of different people that we could make claims against for premises liability, and we did make a claim against them. We also had situations where you're in a car, you drive around and sell all day long.
Right.
And you're driving around, and part of your job is to drive. So you get into a car accident, someone else is at fault, that third party is at fault, you still can make a workers' comp claim for your medical expenses and for your lost wages relating to the time period while you're on, you know, any disability relating to those injuries. But you also can make a claim against a third party for causing you injuries. That third party claim is actually a little bit better claim in the sense of reimbursement, because workers' comp, you really don't get non-economic damages, so pain and suffering damages, whereas a regular motor vehicle accident, you do.
Right.
That claim is worth more because of the ability for us to get you more compensation. So if you're in a car accident while you're at work, you probably have a couple of things going on and it becomes more complicated. That's where you need to call us and talk right away so that we can help you through that process.
Right. We got a text, and it's kind of what led me to this topic for you today. We got a text this week saying a guy got hurt, a contractor, in a person's house.
Yep.
What is that?
Yeah, so the person is there working on somebody's house. If it turns out they were hurt because of a dangerous condition that the landowner knew about or should have known about and didn't protect that that contractor from,
right,
you have a claim against the landowner.
Okay.
If it's just straight up, let's say the person was working there and he caused his own injury.
Yeah, fell off a ladder.
Then it's just a workers' compensation. claim.
And he can't do anything against the homeowner.
Most likely not. It's a fact-determined analysis. We've got to understand, can we make a claim against the landowner for some sort of dangerous condition? Okay. Did they contribute to the injury somehow by their negligence?
Right, right. And people should just bring that up. You should make sure when you hire a contractor that they have insurance.
Yes.
Right?
You absolutely want to make sure they have regular insurance for liability, and you also want to make sure if they have employees that they have workers' compensation, because you don't want them to come back after you with some sort of claim.
Yeah, and even though they might not win, it could be a hassle.
Yes, it's absolutely going to be a hassle.
Yeah.
And it's more than you want to deal with.
Right. We talked about this one in depth a few weeks ago, wrongful death type deal.
Yep.
That falls under this as well, right?
Yeah, so you can have wrongful death by itself. There's a statute for wrongful death as to who can make the claim and when they can make the claim. And then it depends on what sort of cause it is. So it could be a negligence claim, could be a medical malpractice claim, causing someone's death through malpractice. Still negligence, but it's a professional negligence. So you have to have another doctor review all the medical records, give you the opinion that they fell below the standard of care. Could be a car accident, mm-hmm. right? Again, the other driver caused injury. We've got the case that down in El Paso County with regard to a friend of yours that got hit by those folks that were street racing. You know, those sorts of things that you deal with, it's still a wrongful death case, but the basis of it may be because of a car accident. And then car insurance would cover potentially their other insurance if they had any relating to a maybe a liability, an umbrella policy, or maybe a homeowner's policy, depending upon what you can say relating to who was driving the vehicle and whether they had permission. That sort of thing. So those sorts of analyses all go relating to the wrongful death because someone has died, and you're saying that it was done by someone else's negligence.
Mm-hmm. So is this a fair way to phrase it? If you get injured by the fault of someone else, it's worth a call?
It is. And even if you don't, so we get calls, another good example, if we get calls about people that were injured by a phantom driver. They hit and run. We haven't been able to figure out who it was, but they've documented that it definitely was a case where they were hit and then the person left the scene. If you have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, you'll be able to make a claim against your own insurance company for those sorts of claims. People don't really think about that a lot of times. If you're living with a family member inside your house and they have a UM/UIM portion of their policy, you can make a claim against their policy, even though they weren't at all involved in the accident. So it's worth a phone call. It's worth 5-10 minutes. We talk about the case, see if there's something we can do, and then hopefully point you in the right direction.
Sure. And do that early.
Early.
Make the phone call early.
Right away.
Okay. It helps everything.
Yeah, you don't want to be doing it, you know, while you're still injured in the midst of the event. But call us a few days later, and then let's sit down and chat about it.
Kevin, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Kevin Flesh, Flesh Law, 303-806-8886. As I mentioned earlier, always a free initial consult. And once again, we have our Flesh Law text line. If you have a question, send me a text, 720-201-8585.
Now for a free consultation with Flesh Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
How much do you need to lower your monthly mortgage payment? $200, $300, $400 or more? As rates decline, take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Over 24 years of saving Coloradans money. Low rates, lower payments, less costs. What makes us different is we listen. As an independent mortgage broker, we shop the top lenders to save you the most. Affordable interest mortgage, 720-895-0500. Want to purchase your next home? You can't qualify unless you sell your current home? Let us show you how to get the down payment out of your current home, qualify for the new one, and then sell yours for the most. Affordable interest mortgage, 720-895-0500. So you want to buy a home. Let us show you loans that can save you money, low down payment, first-time home buyer specials, fixed rates in the fours with buy-downs. Call for details, 720-895-0500, or apply now at AIMortgage.net. That's Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. Regulated by DORA, NMLS, 217-147, Equal Credit Lender.
Zip around the neighborhood, commute to work, or ride the trails on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are electric bikes that are fun and easy to ride. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. At eBike of Colorado, we have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Just try it. Take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
This is 560 KLZ, your home station.
Haystack Help Radio brings you Your Legacy, Your Way, the show that puts you in control of your future. Hosted by Scott Whatley and featuring estate planning attorney Carolyn Duncan, this program is your go-to source for everything you need to know about protecting your assets, your family, and your legacy. Whether it's a will, a trust, or a full estate plan, if you don't decide, the state will decide for you. Attorney Carolyn Duncan brings the experience you need to help you gain peace of mind and avoid costly legal pitfalls. So ask yourself, what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? Don't wait for a crisis before you plan. Now here's Your Legacy Your Way with your hosts, Scott Whatley and Attorney Carolyn Duncan.
And we'd like to welcome you to Your Legacy Your Way. My name is Scott Whatley. We appreciate you being with us. Our show is brought to you by the law firm of Duncan Legal. Check out the website, duncanlegal.com. The number for your free initial consult, 303-394-2358. Always good to have our exclusive estate planning. See, that all just flows together. Exclusive estate planning attorney, Carolyn Duncan. You know what? And the reason why, first of all, welcome to your show. How are you?
I'm doing great.
But the reason why I like to say that is, you know, I came with the background of doing this show with some other things in the past, and they had, you know, 7-8 companies that did estate planning or 20 roofers or whatever. I don't need that. I need one good person. And that's why I chose to do my business model with Haystack Help Radio. I don't need a whole bunch of companies. I just need one in each industry, you know? And so it's just my way of doing it, but I think it's a good thing when you've got one person you believe in, and hopefully that's what our listening audience feels too.
You know? I appreciate that you approached me about that. And, you know, there's a lot of good estate planning attorneys out there. And then sometimes I'm surprised when I see something, I'm going, oh man, how did you get to this? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a big difference between estate planners. One, there's a big difference than LegalZoom or whoever it is nowadays, because they're asking you questions, but if you don't answer the question right, you're not really getting a plan. You're getting a fill in the blank.
Right.
And then I always laugh about the orange forms, which is the old Colorado. Well, they're still common, but the Colorado estate planning forms, and they call them orange forms because when they first came out, they were kept in an orange binder. Kind of deal.
That's funny.
And you can draft from them, but a lot of them is fill in the blank.
Right.
And so I think a lot of estate planners are like me, in which we have the software, but software can only go so much. There's still individual drafting going on, in which you're taking what does your client want and need, and you're changing the dynamic of it. Mm-hmm. Because when you think of the estate planning here, you really have to think of it as a rule book. That's what it is. You are making your own rules of how you want to distribute your estate, who you give it to, when you give it to them, and who handles it for you, as opposed to what the state of Colorado dictates. Colorado doesn't want your stuff, but they do have statutes that says this is how we're going to do it if you don't have any estate planning. And I guess having any estate planning is better than known, but I've seen some where you're looking at it going, whoa, we need to invoke this section about a supplemental needs trust, and there's not a whole lot of bite there.
Right.
You know, I'm going, I know the intent, but how is this really going to help this person that needs that? Mm-hmm. And it's really key when it comes down to that, because you want it to be a third-party trust if you can, meaning you're only getting this money because someone died. But if you don't have estate planning and you have a child that has some special needs and things like that, and it goes to them automatically under the statute, then that's a first-party trust. And, you know, Medicaid's going to want the money.
Gotcha. You must get into some interesting stories with clients sometimes about maybe they have three or four kids and, okay, we're doing this for these three, but we're not doing anything for this one. I mean, you must hear all kinds of different scenarios of what's going on. How do you get into, I mean, it's their plan, their way of doing it, you know, that's mm-hmm. why it's called your legacy, your way. But do you ever advise anything on how to go about that when someone is wanting to leave someone out of something, when they, you know, clearly well that individual is probably going to be expecting something when that loved one may pass?
And, you know, here's the big key thing. When you're leaving children out, you can't leave a minor child out. You can leave them out, but the law is going to protect a minor child. The law is not going to protect someone who's 21 and older. So it's a little bit easier to do it then.
Okay.
Maybe not nice.
And hopefully no one's wanting to leave their 8-year-old out.
No. Okay. But I'm just saying you got to make that distinction.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking years and years ago now. I did an estate plan for someone. It was a hospital visit because he was told, need to put your affairs in order. So we did that. I mean, this is 2018 time frame. Go and do that and get it signed. And he lived longer, not a whole lot longer, but more mm-hmm. than expected. And so let's say we did that first plan. We're in August, so I'm going to say in August. Then he comes to me in December and says, you know, I've been going back and seeing my children, and I've reconciled with my oldest son. And I'm going, ooh, you have an older boy? I know about the two I'm taking care of. There's another one. He goes, yeah. And so I want it to be divided three ways. And I literally asked him, I said, are there any other children I need to know about? No. Okay, so we restated the whole trust because I said, you know, don't want that to be as a amendment. Let's just make it like he was always there rather than, hey, surprise kind of deal. Then this guy passes away, and the trustee came, and it was his ex-wife's husband, and they both came and said, you know, he had two other children, and I apparently had a look on my face because the ex-wife says, I knew he didn't tell you, and I can tell by the look you have on your face. Mm-hmm. When I said, there's another boy and there's a girl. And it's like going, wow. I said, I did ask him. So then the two that were left out completely, they weren't very nice. And I think it was more her than him. And they literally show up in my office on the day of the funeral. And they're going, you know, we're so-and-so. And I'm going, yeah, I kind of guessed that. Why? Because we look like our dad. I'm going, no, people just don't drop into my office without me knowing. And they're bringing the birth certificate and say, hey, he's our dad. And I'm like going, yeah, I get that. You know, unfortunately, you're over the age of 21. And, you know, he decided he wasn't going to leave you anything. And he omitted you. So he basically disinherited you. And they didn't have the wherewithal or the thought process or whatever it was that they didn't challenge it. So she didn't go quietly in that. She was posting a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's one way to do it. But a lot of times when there is a probate litigation and they go, okay, you left me nothing. And if I contest it, I'm going to get nothing, but I'm getting nothing right now. So why not throw my hat in the ring and see if I can't get something? Because the court's going to make you go to mediation before you go to any trial.
Right.
And so, you know, that's where it usually falls. It's just with this particular case, they never challenged it. Mm-hmm. Kind of deal. So
do you see people that take things to a mediation type deal? Do they, you see some success that people have there in those mediation? Or if it's just clearly written, usually that's what holds up.
You know, I can tell you, I have participated, and another way you can fix some of this stuff is not even by filing a lawsuit, but you can do a beneficiary agreement that doesn't have to be approved by the court, saying, okay, why don't we try to fix this and make this a little bit better to where... you know, maybe you weren't being treated fairly kind of deal. Or I've done one, you know, not too long ago where it's like going, I don't want to have to deal with him in the future and my dad's leaving me in charge of it. I just rather.
Yeah, it's not worth the aggravation.
You know, let's settle up and I'll give him his money and he can go do what he wants. And if he spends it all, he spends it all, you know, kind of deal. So I've seen a lot of those. I mean, when I say a lot, you know, I could be doing 3-4 a year, you know. It's not like it's every month, but yeah.
Right. Again, you're listening to Your Legacy Your Way with our attorney, Carolyn Duncan, 303-394-2358. All right, we're going to get into some things here of, you know, who needs an estate plan, break down some things. But I do want to bring up this because our first point on that topic, we're going to be talking with parents with children, but kids are going back to school. When I say kids, your 18-year-olds are going to college, different things, going to different states, and it doesn't really matter if they stay here or go to a different state for what we're going to talk about. I am shocked at the people that when I tell them, do you have any kind of financial power of attorney or medical power of attorney for your kid going away to school? No, because they're just 18. You know, I mean, you know, whatever. So there are a couple of documents that these parents should have, isn't it?
Yes. I believe they need a medical power of attorney in which if something happens to them, that parents can be notified, or that if you, you know, are in that car accident and you're looking for your kid, they'll tell you, hey, here's your kid, because you've got the document that says, hey, I'm here kind of deal. Because if you're 18 or older, they don't have to tell anyone kind of thing. And it's even harder if they're in a car accident and they can't speak. Doesn't mean that they're dead and dying, but maybe they, you know, can't speak at the moment because of whatever, and we have to do emergency surgery or whatever, and they can't talk and say, contact mom and dad. You know, it's just incredible of how that happens. And so, yeah, you want them to be able to contact you if something happens to your child and they can't speak for themselves at the moment.
Right.
You know, kind of deal.
It would probably be a surprising figure if you look, you know, all around the country in 1 year, how many kids are involved in an auto accident while at college.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I bet you it would be astronomical.
Oh. And I also think that they need to have maybe not a full-blown general power of attorney, but I think they do have one that if something happens, then you can get into their apartment or into their dorm room to get whatever it is that you need. It might not be a bad idea to say you can get into the bank account kind of deal. It's, you know, they don't need one necessarily talking about real property and some of that, you know, doesn't have to be really long and all that, but put in some general stuff there that could come up if they're in an accident.
Right. All right. Again, there's no priority here. We're just going to break it down. Who needs an estate plan? All right. So, as I mentioned, parents. Now, let's talk about those with the minor children. Why do they need one?
You know, and I get it. Some parents are young and they're starting out, And they're like, well, we don't really have those assets. And for me, I look at it and I say, well, you do have assets. Your assets are your children. Mm-hmm. You know, they're your greatest asset. Why wouldn't you want to protect them? Anytime you have a minor child, you need an estate plan. You need that will to name who is going to be the guardian of this child. Otherwise, you're opening up a free-for-all as to maternal and paternal sides of the family. It's expensive to do guardianships, and the guardianship is, where are they going to live? They may not necessarily be living with you, depending on the circumstances, but you're making those day-to-day decisions. And then if they're left any kind of money, whether it's through life insurance or, you know, anything like that, well, now you need a conservator. The big thing about the conservator is you're handling the money, but they get it at age 21. They may not be in that position at age 21 to be able to handle that. Mm-hmm. But hey, you didn't take care of what you were supposed to be doing. So this is what the state of Colorado is going to do. I tell people all the time, yeah, you don't think you have an estate plan? Don't worry. The state of Colorado has one for you. You just might not like it. But putting minor children into the probate system,
right.
Why would you do that? If you could just get some simple documents, and if you don't really have the assets when you're starting out, you don't have to have all the bells and whistles, but you can at least take care of your children mm-hmm. so they don't end up there.
Right. What is the case, and we think we've discussed this in the past, but let's say like somebody's going on a vacation. They're leaving the kids. We'll leave this A and a B. A with like a, quote, babysitter that might stay with them for the week. Some may be relatives. The kid gets hurt. Need some medical attention. And loved ones or a babysitter take them to the hospital or something, can they start talking about medical care without some kind of paperwork?
You can, and it literally is a one-page document.
Okay.
And it's called Delegation of Parental Responsibilities. They are only valid for up to 12 months, so they have to be renewed every single year. But you get to say, yep, I'm delegating my parental responsibilities to grandma, and you can go on your vacation or, you know, even if they're the person taking care of them after school. But on that document, it talks about how they do have access to the education and they do have access to medical care kind of deal. And it's a pre-printed form put out by the state, Delegation of Parental Responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting. Again, you're listening to Your Legacy, Your Way with Carolyn Duncan. All right. And some people, and the reason why I'm going through this is because some people say, you know, I don't have stuff. Okay, if you got kids.
You got stuff.
That's stuff. And if you got a house or any kind of property, that's stuff. So, you know, to direct who inherits the property, and again, to avoid that P word, probate, right?
Yeah, you know, I get it. Maybe not so many calls as I used to, where one of the first things they're asking is going, you know, I just need a simple will because I don't really have a whole lot. And I usually start that conversation with, well, why don't you describe to me what a simple will means to you mm-hmm. so that I'm on the same definition, because I know what I think it is.
Right.
But I'm trying to look for what do you think it is. And then I usually get to the, well, do you have a house? Yeah, well, you know, it's got a mortgage. Yeah, but it's got some equity. You know, what do you think the house is worth kind of deal? Do you have a car? Do you have bank accounts? I'm like, that doesn't sound like you have nothing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you may not need all the bells and whistles, but the whole idea behind an estate plan is that you get to control where does your stuff go, how do they get it, and who's the person in charge who's going to gather it up, pay off the debts, and distribute what's left over. You get to select those things, but only if you have an estate plan.
Right. What about our single folks? Okay. You know, they don't have a family, you mm-hmm. know. Let's say they may even be renting somewhere. So mm-hmm. they feel like, I really don't have anything. They still need some core documents, right?
They might. You know, if they're renting and they really don't have anything, yeah. But I would think you'd at least want to have a medical power of attorney. You'd at least, you know, depending on your age, I'm not sure an 18-year-old needs to have a living will. They're not thinking of death mm-hmm. and dying kind of deal. But I think you'd at least want that. And I think you'd at least want, you know, a statutory power of attorney to be able to get into bank accounts and things like that.
Right. How complicated can it get with a term we've used now for a number of years, blended families, you know, where you've got ex-wives, you've got, you know, kids with other, with the, from the other spouse, their kids with you, different things like that. Those take a little bit more detail in how things are spelled out.
They do. They do. I mean, I've had a couple where they are doing their own individual trust, but they're also talking about their spouses within there as mm-hmm. well, but they're trying to protect their family. A lot of mine, doing a single trust, dealing with a blended family of going, hey, I have the cabin up in, you know, Vail, and that goes to my kids. And you can dictate what you want to go to your kids, and then what goes to the other spouse, and what about the stuff that we own together? Does that get divided between all the kids? It's just thinking your way through what are you dealing with, mm-hmm. and how are you going to handle it?
Right. Because, like, that would sound like a clean way to do it. It is. The guy's got two kids, the lady's got two kids, and they blend together, so now a total of four. But, hey, the guy leaves everything to his, she leaves everything to hers, and that'd be a clean way to do it.
Could be.
Yeah.
You know, but I find even in the blended marriages, it's not unusual to see that they own a house together. Mm-hmm. So what happens with that joint house?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Now, what about business owners? How does that, is that usually kind of broken out of the estate plan and done in some type of trust itself with a business, or how do you go about that?
You know, I think when I've got business owners and they have partners, I always kind of talk about, hey, do you have key man insurance? Because let's say you got five partners and you got a successful business going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them dies in a car accident. Well, the remaining four may not want to become partner with your spouse. So how are you going to pay off that spouse?
Gotcha.
And that can be done through key man insurance, or it can be done through, you know, an operating agreement that literally spells out how's it going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we going to do with this? When you have, you know, solos, it's a little bit easier, but it's like, okay, how am I going to deal with this? I've got a family here, and if I have a trust, I can at least, if it's an LLC, assign it to the LLC, that they can go in and take care of business and all that. It's kind of its own different beast. Like in my law office, not anyone can just shut down a law office. You right. got to be a lawyer to shut it down. And if you don't have someone designated, well, then the state bar has a section in there. I don't even know if saying section is the right word, but a group that's their job is to come in and shut down the law firm and do what they do. I know that they have the same thing for accountants, because the whole 20-some years ago, my husband's accountant died, and you know, long time later, could have been 12, 15 months later, he gets his some of his money back from his retainer, because they went in and they shut it down. But not just anyone can go in and shut down a professional office.
Interesting. Wow. Now, you say, you've always said a will-based plan and a trust-based plan, mm-hmm. right? And a trust-based plan, you say, keeps things more private.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
Okay, so when I'm saying about a will-based plan, and let's say you have a house, and, you know, when you have a house, you're going to probate. And probate is done in the light, in the sunlight. Anybody that has, I think it's $15 now, can get into that probate file. It's not private.
Okay.
And that's electronically.
Right.
Where if it's where a divorce, you can't just pay $15 and get in there, because you have to be either a party to the divorce, meaning a husband or the wife, or you have to be an attorney. Now, there is an exception that if you're shopping around because you don't like your first attorney, I, as an attorney, can get into it, but I can't see the private stuff. Like, I'm not going to see the financial statements. I'm not going to see the child support. But I can see the divorce decree. I can see, you know, the pleadings and things like that. And usually when that's going on, it's because we're going to do a substitution of counsel, or you're coming on board and you're trying to get that stuff up front. Mm-hmm. But it's limited even for the attorneys.
Right.
But probate's not like that. It's not limited. And so anytime a probate's done, I get a letter from this group of going, hey, are you looking for heirs and all that? I get that letter on every single probate I open up because they're looking.
Yeah.
Oh, we can get people. You get letters or cards of going, want to sell a house.
Right.
They're looking.
Right. Let's talk. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes here. What's that initial consult look like? Somebody calls you today, 303-394-2358, make that initial consult with you, and then they want to move on. What does that first real appointment look like?
You know, if you get me on the phone, usually Cliff answers it, and he can get it scheduled. But if he's not here, or if they have a question and I get on, you know, I kind of go, well, what are you looking for and what are you thinking? And, you know, I have no problem telling people of going, hey, you know, I'm not going to settle this in a 10-minute conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, best thing to do here is let's do a consultation. I said I'm willing to do those in person or via Zoom. I don't want to do them on the phone. There's just no connection on the phone.
Right,
we're talking
right.
to a black box. And my preferred way is definitely in person.
Sure.
But at least Zoom, you're looking at someone.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really going through, well, do you have anything now? What are you thinking about? What are you trying to accomplish? And then when they get here, if they don't have anything, I always ask, well, you know, can I give you my 50-cent tour to tell you the difference between, you know, a will-based plan and a trust-based plan or an irrevocable trust mm-hmm. kind of deal? And can I explain to you how the probate process works? Colorado probate is not difficult. It has a lot of moving parts, and it can be difficult if people are arguing or there's a lot of money, you know, kind of deal. But for the most part, for the majority, it's not that difficult, but it's
right.
the number of moving parts of going, well, you got to do this or you got to do that. We stepped into one a couple of months ago because they didn't have the name, the decedent's name on the pleading of the letters is not the same one that the house is titled in. And they have to, you know, that's why you have to do also known as. So we were put into, can we fix the caption to add the name that's on the real property? I said, yeah, we can do that. And then the person goes, well, why do I have to share this with my siblings? I'm going, well, because there's no will. And the law says that's what you do. You know, and I can tell you, I was hired for a very specific purpose. And then I did the courtesy of going, hey, now that you're this, she already was the personal representative. I was just fixing the
right,
caption.
Right.
But I sent her a pretty detailed letter of going, this is what all these moving parts are. And, you know, doing my own CYA of going, you really need to divide this because this is what this is saying. Kind of deal. And it's like going, okay, you know, I'm good with what I felt I did. And there were a couple of things that the court said, oh yeah, here's a love note. And I'm going, okay, we'll file this for you, but you got to do this stuff. And we did get out of it cleanly, but it was a real case of her not understanding what her job was. She's like, mm-hmm. well, they weren't here taking care of her. And I was, well, that's not my problem. That's not what the law says.
Right. Right. Well, a lot to know. Here's the good part. You don't have to know it because Carolyn Duncan does. All right. It is DuncanLegal.com. Her number, 303-394-2358. And hey, when you call, let her know you heard her here on Your Legacy, Your Way, KLZ 560. And we'd appreciate that as well. Carolyn, as always, thank you for your time. We'll look forward to our show next week.
Look forward to it.
Thanks for being with us today. Again, folks, hey, free initial consult, half hour, 303-394-2358. Take advantage of that. And Carolyn will get you on your way to having a good, proper estate plan to leave it where your legacy, your way is true for you. Thanks for being with us.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.